that this program of World Watchers is made possible in part by ARC, Laser Optical Technology, a leading manufacturer of microcomputer peripherals located in Scotts Valley. For more information, call 438-7400. Now, hang in there. The phone is ringing, and I'll pick it up in 1 minute. I do want to explain to you that in 2 weeks, we are going to change the format for the fundraising. Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take your call. You're on the line, and in between calls, I'll announce what we're going to do for the fundraising for Kazoo. Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure.
Two things. One, I heard in the news tonight, and I've heard this yesterday, when they had the oil spill back in the east and the river was getting filled up with it, now they've found that there's all these other toxic levels that are 10 or more times higher than normal that companies were calling up at the time to find out where the slick was and when it was going to be passing through wherever. And apparently a lot of these companies then took advantage of that time.
And dumped.
To dump all their crap.
You know, this reminds me of when Chernobyl, the explosion went off, then the atomic plant in Westphalia was leaking, and
yeah.
I believe it was set up because in newspapers in Germany, and also there were riots, like 10,000 people there around this atomic plant, and it was leaking, and then they blamed the Russians if you got cancer later, because they overdosed it to make sure that you felt it for years.
Exactly, and to blame it all on them.
Yes.
There was an article that I've read. It was published first in something out of Sweden, People's Campaign Against Nuclear Power.
Oh, yeah.
About this guy, Joe Harding, who worked at the uranium enrichment plant in Paducah, Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
And I read this on Sunday, and I can't handle organic horror. I can't handle seeing movies like Alien that I've heard about where they have such graphic things.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to real life, I want to read just a very short paragraph here where they interview him, and then the next day they were going to continue the interview, but he was in fact dead by the next morning.
Oh, no.
Had come from Sweden.
Oh,
and
no.
I mean, it's a horrible article, but it's one person's description of their experiences of being brainwashed, working in this plant from age 31 to, you know, for like the next 15 years, and being exposed to the radiation and the toxicity. And he's talking about fingernails. 3 years later, it was discovered that Joe had pneumonia on one side. Since then, he's had pneumonia almost constantly, 11 times altogether. The physicians who examined his lungs said that they looked, quote, strange, and that the insides were covered with unusual tiny pits or holes. Even his pneumonia was an unusual kind, they said. But what it was, they didn't know, says Joe. They just said that this is real different. We haven't seen anything like it before. In 1970, nail-like growths began developing from the fingerprint side of Joe's fingers and thumbs. Somewhat later, they started growing also from his knuckles and finger joints. Now I have fingernails growing even from my wrists, elbows, and shoulders, Joe says, and something like toenails are growing from my ankles and kneecaps.
Oh.
Various doctors have said it is mutations, cell changes caused by radiation. And I read it, and I just felt it's so hideous. The best word to describe it is hideous.
Oh, that's terrible.
Of what human beings suffer. This is from Union Carbide, owns this company.
Let me ask you, what paper is that in?
It's. I can send you a copy of it. I got it from the International Institute of Concern for Public Health out of Toronto.
Oh, yes, send me a copy of that.
It's very good.
That's really terrible.
It's so hideous. And this thing hearing about these companies who were glad to take advantage of the spill is exactly the same type of profits at any cost.
Well, you know, we contract the big companies, contract the mafia to get rid of the spill in New Jersey. I don't know how many other states.
Uh-huh.
And they dump it right in the water and right where people drink, and they get a good price for it. And, it's probably cheaper to hand it to the mafia than to somebody who's doing it right. And I think that each company, if they make something that causes poison, they should be responsible for storing the waste there. But they dump it somewhere else. It's just hideous.
Yeah. One last thing. I just today got a new Convergence newsletter from Christic.
Yeah, I got one today, too. Yeah.
And it's very good in there. I want to read a quick brief thing from General Singlob's newest war.
Yeah.
And they quote him initially, "If I were back in Vietnam in a firefight, then I'd ask for an airstrike to blow the bastards away. But to win this fight, we need money. to fight the damned Christic Institute lawsuit takes money.
Oh.
And this is when he was...
Philippines money?
Well, whatever.
Philippine
you know,
gold
from the Philippines, that's fine.
Yeah, the Christic has nothing, and it takes money to fight this one. Boy, if he's so innocent, it shouldn't take a penny.
Well, and they're all getting really worked up about it. At one point, they're saying Secord's conspiracy theory is beginning to make rounds in extremist circles. They're saying that the Christic is a communist conspiracy front group.
Yes.
And they're saying... The claim originally surfaced in October during a debate on C-SPAN cable network between Christic Institute General Counsel Daniel Sheehan and Cliff Kincaid, author of the article in Human Events, this magazine that, interviews Singlaub.
Yes.
And director, Cliff Kincaid, of Analysis for Accuracy in Media.
Yeah, oh, God.
Okay, and then at the very end of it, they're saying, the Institute's investigation, Kincaid wrote in Human Events, may hamstring efforts to reactivate the private operation to supply the Contras if Congress ever decides.
Good, that's what it's supposed to do. That's
absolutely
right. Yeah.
Some of the defendants who are now tied up in court may find it impossible to resume their roles in a vitally
good
necessary private aid network for the freedom fighters. This is quoted out of the
Well, that's
case.
Good. That's what a private lawsuit should do. That's good.
And
okay.
Then the defendants must now, quote, take care of the Christic Institute, unquote, he wrote. One of the targets singled out by Secord is Institute General Counsel Daniel Sheehan. Quote, we will this is Secord. We will definitely deal with this guy, Secord told Kincaid. It will be a service to the country.
Oh, my God. That's like telling him, announcing he's going to be dead.
Absolutely. It's a contract named.
It's a contract because he works with that Peregrine that hires people to do what the government can't do to kill.
Sure.
And he funded Robert Brown. There's a lawsuit now, Robert Brown, somebody that the family of someone who was murdered. And the contract was an ad that he had in his magazine for a mercenary who answered it to kill somebody here in the United States. And the going price is anywhere from $5,000. Maybe Sheehan said there was a price of $100,000 or something. But, boy, to take the wrath of those people, he's really signed it up, you know.
They've really put themselves on the line, and you know,
yeah,
it's getting closer to trial date in June.
And they're probably more vicious because with all this material, like the stuff I had on tonight,
sure,
I could go 5 hours.
Yeah.
So the noose is getting tighter around their necks for all the murdering they've done for all these years.
Absolutely.
And so he opens his filthy mouth. I think the Nuremberg defense was better. I just took orders.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is just terrible.
Well, they're trying to basically raise the sympathy level of the extreme paranoics in the country.
Well,
who
if they're trying
communism
to,
behind anything.
They're trying to do is get people like that guy that did the shootout up in, near Palo Alto this week. Some
yes
guy to prove he's not a wimp by shooting Danny Sheehan.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I mean, how can he go to court and back? How in the world can you be protected against people who've made a whole career, you know, out of murder?
Yeah.
You know, I one of the first books I want to write on the whole Iran-Contra is their fixation with death.
Cult of Death, yeah.
That's right. Well, listen, thanks for that.
Thank you so much. I'll send it to you.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. Those are strong words, and they do have the means. They have Cubans and Eustachy and all kinds of people that can off. This is almost like saying, well, we've got to rid the earth of this person. This is really terrible. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, May.
Hi.
Yeah, you mentioned the Eustachy just now. Did you know that Sunnyvale, Cupertino, Monta Vista area of Santa Clara County is an Eustachy stronghold?
No, I didn't.
It is. There's more Croatians there than you could shake a stick at.
Boy, some night I'll have to do 1 hour if you have a stomach for just the atrocities they did.
Yes,
in Yugoslavia.
I read about them.
Oh, I have material that is just so sickening.
Yeah, well, to kind of illustrate real quickly without getting gross, the Eustachy told the Nazis, why waste bullets? Why don't you just burn them alive,
yeah,
our opponents?
Yeah.
Yeah, that shows you, that's their mentality.
Yeah, they cut the throats and put them up on poles, yeah.
Yeah. And a whole bunch of them came out. They all, when the Russians came in, they all came out, and most of them were brought into the United States with Operation Overcast, Operation Paperclip.
Yeah, that's right.
And a lot of them settled in the... in the mid-California area, and a lot of them are over in Cupertino and
and
Sunnyvale. It's a very strong Sunnyvale, where incidentally that Richard Farley,
yeah,
supposedly the lone loony,
yeah, from the FBI, with security clearance from the FBI.
Yeah, there was a definite behind him in that. That was that was a public mental programming.
I know. I'm going to do more on that case soon. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because that goes into what they're calling it. I want to get on the Michael Aquino thing in a second, but what I want to hit first is there was an article in the Chronicle Thursday, February 18th, that says more teens ending up in psych wards. Okay, what the gist of the article is the article came out and said there's less teens because the population dropped, and there's not any more, there isn't any more crazy people. It's just their psychiatric technocracy is putting more people away.
Oh.
And as I mentioned before on the program, the psychiatric technocracy largely, the behavioral science movement with this infamous Tavistock Institute, and what comes out of there, it's an arm of enforcement of worldwide Nazism. And what they're using now, the latest thing they're using is this attention deficit disorder, which is used to be the old hyperactivity.
Yeah.
And if you ever read a book called The Myth of Hyperactivity, you'll see that that's exactly what's going on. Anyone who disagrees with them, anyone who's a compulsive gambler, a substance abuser, which the Nazis want to go after, or a career criminal, they're just stamping it with this rubber stamp label, attention deficit syndrome, clunk.
Oh, that's terrible.
And, they're in psychologists, especially clinical psychologists, and the psychiatric technocracy is using that because the Nazi, all the Nazi doctors that we smuggled in here got power in the 50s, and them and their children or their proteges have taken over most of the behavioral sciences thing, and of course the ongoing thing with the Tavistock Institute.
Yes, the next generation.
I'm sure you've heard of that.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
in fact, Michael, I want to get to Michael Aquino
here.
I did see the Oprah Winfrey show, and it made me sick.
What did you think of that?
He was lying through his teeth.
I know.
Yeah, because this goes back to who his mentor and protege is Christy McManus.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't want to mention her name anymore in the air because send me articles about it where I see it, okay? Because unless I see it, I can't use something. What my format is to use what I can read or study. Otherwise, it may all be true, but you may be ahead of your time. But I have to see where it's coming from with the sources because I can't use one name over and over and never see it printed or read.
Yeah, but I just mentioned that now as a fact of Michael Aquino.
Yeah.
And the relationship. But anyway, that Michael Aquino thing, I would have liked to have been there to ask him a few questions.
Yeah, they were
the same ones you would have asked.
They were pretty easy on his politics.
Yeah, but they should have asked him, well, what about the occult rituals with Heinrich Himmler at the Himmler Castle, Michael Aquino? That would have floored him.
Yeah, you know, and his uniforms, Nazi uniforms. And now it turns out that other children besides that one little girl were at his home and that they couldn't bring up. If he'd bring up the horrible things, like eating the feces and the blood rituals, but the parents, the prosecutor wouldn't bring it under the guise that no one would believe it. I believe they'd believe it. They just don't want the case to come to a head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wanted to mention one more thing before I sign off here, is that they're continuing the worldwide Nazi movement plans on using what I've mentioned before. It's called the backlash generation. The really conservative youth that form the Young Republicans or the Young Americans for Freedom are basically of the age group born about, say, 53 or 54 through 1958. And these are the ones that had a reactionary backlash against the 60s hippieism, youth rebellion, drugs, all that, which the Nazis do want to destroy.
Yeah.
And they're planning on using that age group I just mentioned, 54 to about 58, is a population grassroots power base for when they do have their takeover attempt of the United States, which still is planned for April 20th, 1989, the 100th birthday of Adolf Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And they plan on, within a year, April 20th, 1990, to have secured the United States. And don't forget what you mentioned, which is true, these Wolfstadt City Halls.
Yes.
The government building in Santa Cruz, the city-county government building, that's going to be one of the Wolfstadt City Halls.
Uh-huh.
But you can pretty well pick out which building.
Yeah, well, you can see it all. And this,
this
private space station, that's scary as hell.
Yeah, but there is no real private space station for the simple reason that the Alternative 3 program controls what goes on anywhere in space.
Yeah, but private among a certain group of people.
Right, yeah, but they're definitely beholden to you-know-where.
Yeah, but it could be General Motors and ITT, the same people that funded Hitler.
Yeah.
See, if it's private corporations, then anything that's up there, no one else can see.
Yeah.
It's really bad. And then workers may never come back, like Auschwitz. You know, they just may never come back. So we don't know how many went up and how many come back.
Yeah, well, there's back to Timothy Leary's space migration. He just wasn't joking when he used that phrase.
Well, literally. He's one of them. That's why I wasn't joking.
Yeah,
he worked with the Mellons and the CIA.
Yeah.
You know, he uses it because he's one of them.
Yeah,
so
you've read that book, The CIA, LSD in the 60s.
Yes.
Yeah, it's quite a good source book.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, thanks a lot for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Always good information there. Now, before I take the next call, 375-3082, I want to tell you not next week, but the week after, we're going to have fundraising week. And so Jim Bourne, who has the jazz program after me, from 9 to 12, is not going to have his program. I'm going to take 4 hours. There's a call here, so hold on the line, and I'll get to you 1 minute. I'm going to take from 7 to 12. That's, I believe, on the 7th, Monday the 7th. And World Watchers will be from 7 to 8, as usual, but it may not be. I've invited certain researchers to be on the telephone with me and share with you what they're doing and what material they have available and how they're progressing in regards to the assassination and various aspects of the investigative process. And I have some surprises for you. And if you want to send in, the more people that send in early and pledge, and then we'll give you on the air the premiums, the potluck or books, some more books, Charles Heim books, Tom Davis is donating, then I'll tell you what those are. But if 30 people would write, 30 former subscribers to World Watchers renew their membership here, and if 30 new people within the next 2 weeks send in their pledges, then I'll have 5 hours for you of interviews with people around the country, people that I've known, worked with, shared information with, and a lot of them you know, and you'll be glad to hear them, and some you will be surprised. I have some surprises for you. So that I'm willing to go the full 5 hours, which would be 10 guests. I already have 6 lined up. So if you want to send in your pledges, we won't even have to have any fundraising that evening. You can get the maximum of hearing them talk.
The controlled media that you garner a lot of the facts from isn't what they want you to think instead of what really is, or perhaps it's just a clue but not the full story.
Well, okay, let's just take part of that question before you go on.
Okay.
If you have more. A lot of the facts I use, like I'll say there's a court case here, or the district attorney went here, or the prosecutor said this,
mm-hmm.
or the autopsy report said that,
mm-hmm.
or this person was dead on this date. Like Suham died December 24th, 1986, and on September the 26th, Khashoggi, who's a friend of his, wants his money and goes to Washington. And in the Tower report or in the Iran-Contra report, just sworn under oath, a lot of the material that I'm taking are events that have happened that are real. They weren't made up. These aren't theories. I don't read any editorials.
Mm-hmm.
I don't read any of them because I just cannot use that for information, and I want my own ideas, and I want my ideas to come from what I consider the facts. Now, one of the things you can do in a free society, you can print articles. If you came to the house now, you would see maybe 200 amazing stories, but none of them came in the Monterey Herald or the San Francisco Chronicle.
Okay.
But I have to take facts. Newspapers from around the country. In fact, there's a trial going on of the Aryan Nations of Reverend Butler in Arkansas. So I called down there and started taking another newspaper this week because we won't know what the trial is doing. But if the DA brought this up and the defense said that, or say the case of Aquino, these are charged, and then on this date they drop the charges, those have to be facts because they could pertain to courts of law. You know what I mean? You can separate some facts. Okay.
Okay. Now they might. Okay, like you say, they might have a conclusive result, like a person was acquitted or whatever.
Yes.
But
yes.
A lot of times, I personally have gone to some local trials, for example.
Yes.
Where I have watched the proceedings and then watched and then read the paper the next day to see what the Herald had to say about
that particular
trial.
And there's no similarity.
Yeah, and there's a lot of distortion as to what really happened in the courtroom and what was recorded in the paper.
Yeah,
so
but if the case
that
is thrown out or if a person's acquitted, that's not distorted.
No, that part isn't.
No, so what I try to stay... Well, let's finish. What I try to stay with a lot of the time is separating the wheat from the chaff All I can say is that I've been on the air 17 years, and there's an hour cassette for each week for 52 weeks times 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I have printed bibliography sheets
mm-hmm.
that go with the broadcast, and listeners can call in if they found an error. But I have never been in a position, I use the expression, where I'm on a limb and sawed it and found myself sitting there and cut myself off. I think I'm able to take a massive amount of information, and some I would love to share with you, but I'm not sure about it.
Yeah.
So I don't use it at all, because I don't want to go back later and say, well, I made a mistake, I didn't have all the facts.
Well, I admire your program very much. I'm on your side. I'm not against you or anything. The only thing I'm saying is that I'm not saying that you're distorting anything, but a lot of times perhaps the material from which you gather some of the facts that you put on the air perhaps are distorted before you get them.
Well, what I have to do, that's true. I've gone to demonstrations, I've gone to hearings and things. What I have to do, first of all, I can't get it from one newspaper,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I ask people when they talk with me, I mean, even, you know, close friends, not as adversaries, how many papers do you read a day,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how much time do you give to the papers?
Yeah.
And then I take a cross-section, so I'm getting 10 or 11 a day.
Yeah.
And by taking those and putting them together, and some of these...
Trying to filter out what might really happen.
And there's certain reporters like Alphonse Chardy from Miami Herald or Pete Carey from San Jose Mercury. They're Pulitzer Prize writers.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, like this shocking stuff that Bob Woodward had around Casey, everyone wanted to deny it. Mrs. Casey was the first. But then everyone who knew him said it had to be true, because he wouldn't sacrifice his reputation on an untruth. He would leave out maybe two-thirds of the story, but the part he gave you was true.
Yeah.
See, he's not telling us the whole Watergate. I know he isn't. I think I'm the only one in the country who ever had that. He's not telling the whole Iran-Contra, but the party tells you. The newspapers are so careful to check things out. They use a lot of ways to check out. And even when I wrote an article on the KAL for Hustler magazine, they had six attorneys working for 2 months to check out every sentence and reference before they went to press.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get certain books, they have a legal team that goes through it with a fine-tooth comb. When you give a book to a publisher, you don't just give an index. They check it out. You know, the nonfiction books that I read are checked out by legal departments.
Yeah.
And magazines are very careful.
Mm-hmm.
And newspaper reporters may go to the trial, and they'll tell you what they were told to say about the trial, not what you heard.
Right.
But what they saw, the part they told you, is true. It's just not the whole truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't go to every trial. But I am trying to be very careful, just because I do this, you know, as a hobby.
Right.
And I'd have nothing to gain by making a fool of myself.
Oh, I'm with you on that. I'm just curious, because if you know, I don't know how strong we can make this premise, but if the premise is really as strong as it can be, that perhaps the media is controlled, and to what degree it's controlled, that's the question that I have. It would seem to me that if I were a person controlling the media, that I wouldn't allow anything to get into my newspaper, that I wouldn't have some way of censoring or editing or whatever to make it seem as though it might be something that it might not even be.
Well, they do censor. Now, the media is controlled in this sense. They will tell you what happened today.
Yeah.
But they won't tell you how it connects to yesterday and how it would affect tomorrow.
Okay.
See, they as a man, the ultimate control was that I was on KGO a lot, calling about every 3 weeks and talking with Ray Talfier. And when the subject came up about the Nazis in the police, in the fire department in San Francisco, there was an order, I guess, from the very top up. May Russell can't be on now because the Aquino case was coming up and I couldn't talk about Nazis. So when I called Ray one night, the producer said, "What do you want to talk about?" And I said, "Well, the fire department." He says, "No, you can't be on the air."
Mm-hmm.
So Barbara Honegger was up there as a guest of Michael Krasny 2 weeks ago, Friday, and somebody called from L.A., "Do you know Mae Brussel?" and started to say David Emery, mentioning his Radio Free. They got to not America. And the producer beeped it off the air, boop, 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 boop. And Michael Krasner said, "I'm sorry, we had to cut that call."
Mm-hmm.
And yet somebody called a little while later, which I've never heard on KGO because they have a 6-second beep, and said to Barbara Honegger, "Will you suck my You know what? I won't say it on KGO. It was said on Kazoo. It was said on KGO.
Right.
Okay. Now, they can beep that off. So, you know, David Emery, Mae Brussels is an obscenity, but that talk isn't obscene.
Yeah.
Because the information is not allowed. They have a man named Jim who's screening that nobody can mention anything I'm doing, because these are very heavy times going into George Bush and the CIA, you know. Hunter Thompson had an article in San Francisco Examiner. In fact, I was going to read it tonight. I'll try to bring it next week. Saying that bastard Bush is still hanging in there. That bastard, that the CIA will do anything to get him elected. He said, you better lock down the manholes, you know. And he talks the most positive, angry, you know, diatribe against George Bush in the printed media.
Right.
But you can't get on KGO. You couldn't do that the past year on Iran-Contra. Ray can talk about Reagan every moment of the night, but the powers of be have decided to protect the former CIA director.
Mm-hmm.
So no one can talk about Bush on KGO.
Okay, well,
so that way it's controlled.
All right. Another thought that I have too, and then I'll take this answer off the air. I have in listening to you for some time. You know, as you mentioned before, and of course we're all aware of the fact that we're in a very military area here. There's a lot, you know, Fort Ord. And
yeah.
Presidio and everything else around here. Okay, even though we're a small community, it's a very there's a large population of people here that are involved with the defense.
Absolutely.
And so forth. Okay. Now, even though your program is reaching a small amount of people in one sense of the word, and it's not like L.A. or something.
But it is played in L.A. now.
Excuse me?
It is played in L.A.
Okay. Well,
it's reaching a lot of people.
Well, great. Okay. Well, the point I'm trying to make is that if the people that are being influenced by your broadcast here are such important people that they're being brought here to go to school and things like that, how is it that nothing has come, you know, nothing has happened to you? You know, you mentioned a lot of times people like senators and others that blow whistles on people, they end up with heart attacks.
But you see, they're in a position to make a decision.
God forbid that anything should happen to you, but
I'm not on, if Barbara Walters wanted to interview me, I'd be in trouble. If you were invited for ABC or Good Morning America or Nightline,
yeah.
If Ted Koppel said, I want a program on Mae Brussels, the researcher, because she said this and this about E.F. Hunt and Merrill Lynch, you know,
yeah.
Then I'd be in trouble.
Okay.
I don't have those goals because as long as I don't reach those people, and that's how Khomeini got into power, you know, just was it 10 years ago? He used a tape cassette. He sat in Paris and made tapes. Do you think that if he went to Iran and gave a lecture, he would be the head of Iran today?
No.
Okay. Do you know that Malcolm X, when he goes, you know, to Madison Square Garden or gives a speech at a hall,
mm-hmm.
or when I keep you referring to Martin Luther King, he has 500,000 people and the I Have a Dream speech in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
That is the kiss of death.
Okay.
When your numbers are lined up behind you and come to see you, but I don't go places. The university up in Sacramento just wrote a letter when I come up. I used to go up and speak. I don't go to those places anymore.
Yeah.
I just want to do my thing, and the powers that be don't listen. I met a guy who's in military intelligence, and he's going down to Riverside to do flying to chase the El Salvadorians and Mexicans back at the border, and he wouldn't listen to a program like this. I said, how much news do you hear a day? And he said, 20 minutes, and how much do you read, you know, the sports page? And he's high up in the military, and they don't listen to this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. Problem of making connections in the news, I have no ambition or no illusions that I'm going to meet a great mass of people doing what I'm doing. You can take this off the air and get copies of tapes and send them to people who make copies of tapes, and then one person makes 20 and another makes 20. But I don't know them, and I don't see them, and they wouldn't know me if they saw me, and that's the way, the route that I have chosen to go. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is, I'm from Santa Cruz.
Okay.
And I'm, what?
Okay.
I'm a first-time caller.
All right.
And this is a pretty big subject, but I was wondering, what do you think the role was of the CIA in the death of Casey?
Role of Casey with the CIA?
His death.
Well, he had told, first of all, he was in charge of the intelligence network there, and there was a Boland Amendment that we shouldn't be arming, you know, down there, the Contras,
yes.
And he was arming the Contras, and the president had this big deal that he was never going to arm or pay for hostages, that'd be blackmailed, that he would never have hostages taken. We now have 12. He's in worse shape, you know, he's adding them up like poor Jimmy Carter went through. And he was sending arms to Iran. He was, like I said tonight, setting up the provisions for death squads, which he used to kill people he wanted and make sure it was all legal. But once Eugene Hasenfus landed in Nicaragua and began mentioning Robert Owen and the National Security Council, then the House Intelligence and Senate Intelligence began to call him in because they realized that he was behind arming the Contras all along. They had reason to know it, but now they had to go through with the investigations. And the day before he was supposed to testify at the Senate Intelligence, he was in the CIA building, and he had what was supposed to be a stroke or brain seizure, and then he was taken off to the hospital. He was in the CIA building. Now, I'm not sure that given the pressure of what he was doing, such as the stuff at Hull's Ranch I'm talking about, and working with Mr. Suham and Khashoggi and Roy Furmark, his partner and friend, a client of his, I'm not sure that he wouldn't even do what the CIA has recommended for each other, would maybe take a poison, which worked. It took his brains out of commission, but he didn't die. He didn't take a cyanide, but he might have even himself done something whereby his brains didn't function anymore, and he eliminated the pressures in his old age. He worked with Robert Vesco, who's involved with the Medellin cartel and uses the same attorney, Willard Zucker, who was funding the whole enterprise. And he has certainly the chemicals and the medicines and a cabinet full of them. And he was to testify the next day on why he told lies to the intelligence committees before. So I just think he conveniently could just take something that, remember, Robert McFarlane tried suicide.
Yeah.
So I think Casey didn't want to face the music. He was an old man, and he was up against the wall, and he had done everything wrong for Reagan for 7 years, breaking all these laws, and including stealing the papers from Jimmy Carter and helping pay off the hostages, Iranians, to keep the hostages till Reagan was inaugurated. I don't think at his age he wanted to take those pressures, and I wouldn't be surprised if he just took something that got his brain out of commission. No one really could see him, and then within a few months he was dead of a brain tumor.
And there's something else I'd like to mention.
Yeah.
Okay. Our school newspaper,
yeah,
the Shadow of the Chain Deck, had been banned from our school,
mm-hmm,
because of an article about AIDS,
yeah,
where they described what went on.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to let you know about that.
What they describe? The relationships, sexual relationships?
Yeah.
Well, my goodness, is this a high school?
Yes.
Aren't they old enough to read that?
I don't know. I just, 'cause, and now it's underground. It's an underground newspaper.
Okay, well, you know, it's kind of cheap. You guys can get type something up. All of you get together and you make 1,000 copies for $5 or something, you know, and staple it together and get yourselves an underground paper and keep up with articles and keep up with information and tell them to listen to World Watchers like you're doing,
yep,
and get yourself informed. You have to get informed in spite of the system.
Yeah.
In spite of the teachers.
Yeah, I wanted to write an article in the paper about you.
Yeah.
And put the what time your channel was on and stuff like that.
Okay, well, you can do that. It's 7 to 9 on Mondays.
Okay.
And talk show, I'm glad you called in. And somebody else called me from up there, and they wanted to do an interview with me on the CIA. And I said, it was a student, I said, do you listen to World Watchers? And he said, I've heard it once. So I said, goodbye. Because if you don't listen a lot,
yeah,
what kind of an interview can I give, you know?
Yeah.
So he wanted me to do the work on the CIA, but if you listen and tell people to listen and tell the kids they can buy tapes at Woolworths for 50 cents each and just save them. That's the way to get information out. You know, the cassette is really the way.
Yeah.
And also your printed newsletter. And if your teachers and professors don't like it, challenge them and say, well, here's what she says. Where's your proof? You know, if you say to your teacher, history teacher, you killed Kennedy, and he'll say Oswald or she killed Oswald, killed Kennedy. You say, well, the House Select Committee spent $6 million and said there was a conspiracy. Where have you been since 1976-77 when the report was being made? You know, just, you can call attention to your newspaper how the teachers don't want you to know the truth.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
Okay, I think it's time that students challenge the teachers, just like that assistant DA down at Miami and the FBI were challenging the official investigators who are covering up the drug and gun running in Florida. You have to get out on your own and just let people know you can figure out things yourself. Hello, you're on the air.
May, did you have anything tonight to say about Jiminy Swaggart?
Jimmy Swaggart?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, just last week he was in headlines for preaching in Nicaragua.
I know. You know, whenever...
He said well about how they've opened the government, and, I mean the people, to free religion and stuff. And
yeah, well, you know, when people are in trouble, they go, you know, into the black community for help. They go to their wives. You know, have you ever seen these prominent people arrested, like Michael Deaver and Lynn Nofziger, and they're in public life for 10 years, and you never see them with their wife? You don't know who she is. And the minute they're indicted, they go hand in hand to look like they're the family people. The women's movement should really speak up and say, you know, don't be a front for their crimes. When they become criminals, they lean on you, and otherwise they don't have anything to do with you. So Swaggart was under trouble. Obviously, this was going to come out before last week. So where does he run? He runs to Nicaragua, you know, for sympathy from people, I suppose. I believe that these...
Did you hear any details in as to when this occurrence or this alleged sexual impropriety occurred?
No, I haven't heard the details. I set the alarm, actually, for Sunday morning to watch his church program, and he didn't confess it on the television part of the... religious worship. He had talked about a collective guilt that we all do it. And we're all sinners and we all go to the whores. It was a collective thing. And then when the TV was off, then he explained that he was caught. I think it's not so bad to have sex with another person, except when you think of how he put down the bakers and called them such terrible sinners and said they didn't tell the truth. And it looked like he was trying to make money off the baker's crimes, you know, the crime, the sin, not the crime.
Well, I certainly hope that his improprieties, if we should call him that, came after he gave such a bad time to the bakers and not before.
Well, see, if he were like some religious television preacher who didn't make fun of the bakers, who didn't use the microphone to build yourself up, and there was hint from the bakers that he was really trying to take over, and I understand that one of those people that knew the bakers were the ones that threw this thing wide open. Because people know about these private things that persons do on the side, their intimacies. But when the minute you try to destroy another person for the same thing you're doing, you better not have any enemies.
Yeah.
Or your opponent better not have some good friends around you. Because if he weren't, he and Falwell really ruined his reputation when he gleefully took on the bakers and hogged the television and the Nightline, and this is when the Iran-Contra hearings were starting, and they'd have a 40-minute press conference with Falwell when he could have said it in 4 minutes, but they didn't want you to see Richard Secord. And, you know, Swaggart and Falwell were so gleeful, you know, about Baker's problems that now they're playing back on TV. I don't know if you've seen it, the duplicity of him scolding them and then being in the same position.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's the worst of all to me, you know. It's just terrible.
Yeah, you think maybe he was guilty of this thing before he went to Nicaragua?
Oh, sure.
You don't think that he went to Nicaragua to cover it up, do you?
I think he just went there to get a cross-section of opinion and feelings of sympathy, like he usually goes to South Africa or Chile. So if he went to see Pinochet and then it came out, he'd be a double bastard. But this way, there's people sympathetic to Nicaragua and that think, you know, that they'll be so harsh on him because he made an effort to go down there. So I think he wanted to round out his career where he was always talking about the South Africans and Chile and the dictatorships. He loves the dictatorship, so he goes down. Oh, sure, this story didn't just break real fast. It's brewing before they catch him and decide to bring it out in the open. But it's the lying, I think, that's hurting the people who believed in
him. Definitely.
I mean, having the sex, I think, is his own personal business. If he doesn't lie to his wife, and if she can't do it, you know, the bakers had trouble that way. So we don't know what goes on in their lives, but they shouldn't get on public television and blast another person for what they're doing themselves. That's where the real hypocrisy comes in.
Yeah, work, especially hypocrisy, should be the number one thing to guard against.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
did you have other feelings about it?
No, I just wondered if you thought maybe there was some reason to get him out of the way because it looked like he was giving good headlines to Nicaragua.
No, if anything, he'd be trying to woo the people away from Ortega.
Mm-hmm.
No, he'd be more of a problem there.
That's what I'd always expected before this, and then I thought, well, this is kind of strange to see him almost standing side by side with Ortega, you know.
Now this week he was crying this week that I usually announce next week I'll be on the air, but I can't do it because I don't have the $1 million a week. He didn't say, I won't be on because I'm involved in a scandal I created myself. Mm. He may need money, but he blames people for not sending enough money for his not being on the air, and he's not being on the air because of what he did. There probably is a certain death wish in these people to do something and get caught, you know, that they do these things. People's minds are very complex, their psyche, and just when they succeed or doing well, they, you know, pull the rug under themselves and do things that are going to cause catastrophe. You know, they've been had problems since they were little, and then they let it develop.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Incidentally, there was that film on the film festival this weekend on Saturday on the religious right, and I saw a lot of you world watchers there. You came up and said hello, and I was really glad to see you, and I think you must have enjoyed that movie. Some of you might call in and talk about it, but it was fun to see you there and to say hello, and I'm sure you enjoyed seeing that movie. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I have three statements and two questions.
Okay.
One, there are two Aquinos. One's Aquino and one's Aquino.
Okay.
Two, this guy Jelly was caught. Did you know
that?
Oh,
yes. I wanted to put that on. Licio Jelly, he's in an Italian jail right now.
Right.
That's right.
The
head of the P2.
Well, it just had a grand master of a spurious Masonic lodge in the Mercury News.
Spurious.
Okay, spurious, right.
Okay.
And one more thing. The reason Kennedy cooperated with the mafia was because he was after Castro.
Yeah.
And the only reason he could get the Castro was using the CIA and the mafia together to assassinate Castro. Those are three facts. Now, two questions.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Two, I agree. There's pronunciations of Aquino and Jelly's in a jail. I don't agree with you that Kennedy was after Castro.
Well, Castro, he did the Bay of Pigs, you know, during his administration.
Yeah, what? Wait a minute.
Castro then.
When you said he did the Bay of Pigs, when he was running for president, when he was in the Senate, the vice president, Richard Nixon, worked with the CIA and the National Security Council, and he thought he'd be the president, and he was making plans to invade Cuba. With the CIA that was hired, the team were hired in 1960, summer of 60, when these guys were running against each other. Now, on the eve of the invasion, which Kennedy was told he would have to do, based upon the CIA and Defense Department, Alan Dulles, the CIA director, who was later on the Warren Commission, when the troops started to land, he realized that he didn't have to do what they told him, and he pulled them back. If you needed the mafia to invade Cuba, you already had the might of the American army to just go on in there. He saved Castro's life.
Okay, two questions.
Okay.
Why is this Meese document about the pipeline classified? It has nothing to do with national security.
That's well, because national security is a euphemism or another word for saving my skin.
Okay, and the next question, you can take this off the air.
Okay.
Why is it all men calling you and no women?
All men?
Thank you. Very good night.
You know, that's an interesting question. There are women that call sometimes. One evening, I think there were three or four calls. I would say, in answer to that question, that thinking along these lines of political has been traditional with men, and the researchers I know, almost all of them are men. Women were told that you do not discuss politics or religion, and that carried on through the years. And there's very few women that have the tenacity to stay with this or the interest to study it, and men are interested in these things. Hello, you're on the air.
Aha, woman.
The woman.
Finally got in. How
well, you're one
that?
Of the courageous long listeners. You listen every week, right?
That's right.
Okay.
I've been catching up on some newspapers while I was gone.
Uh-huh.
And I came on to one that I just was stunned. And it's about Joseph Biden.
Yes. What do you think of that? He almost died.
Well, yes.
Yeah, aneurysm.
He was seriously ill.
Yeah, they assured us that they didn't remove any of the brain.
They did some clipping or something, and they put a clip, a tiny metal clip,
mm-hmm.
around the aneurysm.
Isn't that terrible?
To the artery. But the thing that was interesting to me was that at the end of the article says that he was transferred from St. Francis Hospital in Wilmington, Delaware, where he lives, and went to the Walter Reed Army Medical Center.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They
he should have stayed at Wilmington, Delaware.
That's right. That's like when Reagan had his second colon operation. Nancy insisted that the doctors come in, private doctors from Mayo and not the military doctors. Yeah, goodness knows how long you will live after this. That's what David Ferry and a lot of other primary people of, involved in these investigations die of, this blood clot to the brain.
Yeah.
And he's young, and it's really bad.
Well, he's been the thorn in a lot of people's sides.
And particularly Mr. Bork.
Yes.
And Bork doesn't take that kindly. You look at that mean face. And he's really out. If Singlaub is out for Sheehan, Bork could be out for, yes.
Yeah.
So goodness knows what condition the brain matters in. We haven't heard or seen an interview of him, you know?
Uh-huh. Boy, I'm sure surprised, though. I didn't hear anything at all about Senator Biden.
Yeah.
I saw it in the paper here.
And we don't know what causes those blood vessels, the leak or whatever, you know, the technology that's there. But that's scary.
Boy, it sure is.
Now, let me ask you a question before you hang up. The gentleman wanted to know about women. Why, you study these things, why do you think the calls are predominantly men?
Well, I really don't know, because I think women, a lot of women are home and have more time to get interested in stuff like this, where the man's out trying to make a living and doesn't have as much time to catch up on. All they have time for is just catch up on the news, you know, by watching the television at 6 o'clock or 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
I really don't know. I think there are women out there that are interested.
There are some women like Penny Lanoue, who wrote in Banks We Trust, and there's a Diane Johnstone that writes her In These Times. There are some women that write some good art. Barbara Honegger, a researcher, you know, working on the October Surprise and the Challenger. Barbara's out there, but there aren't very many women, are there?
Don't seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, it's just the way things are.
Well,
the man's world, huh?
Well, maybe they're all in love with me.
Well,
that's what I like to know. I love them all.
maybe you ask the same question.
No, I don't know women in the women's movement as such, women's movements on the peninsula. They're not into politics. They think they're into politics, but the politics to them is like putting your toe in the water.
Well, they're sort of in it for the social part of it.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah.
I was wondering, there was another accident this week. Chiquish had an accident 2 weeks ago, and Dale had one this weekend, a car accident that was terrible.
Who did?
Dale, and she calls up this program, and she's been on Kazoo a lot. She's telephoned and participated, and she's been active. And remember, she was at the hearings out in Salinas for AGS, and she was in a terrible car accident, and she called me for, you know, we were talking about different things, and I thought maybe there would be, in fact, I was going to bring it up tonight, a support group, because when these women get in these crashes, there's no means to support themselves or to hire a lawyer. And I was wondering why there isn't a support group among, there's a lot of women at the station, and they're into the New Age, and they're into women's activities, but why is there a support group of people, like 20 or 30 women, that instantly would come in and help a person who is in a car crash like that?
Now, is she a member of the New Forum?
No, I don't think she is. But those groups just go have lunch once a month or once a week and go to a hotel and have lunch. It's not, I mean, there must be a group of activists here in terms of ecology and nuclear ban and other activities that would all pull together and have some kind of a line or a chain of communication. So if one person is hurt, you could call seven people, and they'd call seven more, and they'd call seven more, and maybe build a tree of people helping each other.
Yeah.
You know, even for men who are in crash and can't get out or shopping or something. I don't think there is anything like that around here, and there really should be.
I don't know of anything, unless you're a member of some church group, and sometimes they, you know.
Yeah, I told her to join the Mormon church.
And help.
I told her to join a church because they help each other. But to counteract religion, if you don't want the formal religion and you don't want to be told by authoritarian figures what God is or isn't, there should be a group of people similar to those in the church whose purposes are to help each other and, in these circumstances, give a hand.
Yeah. Well, I guess people are don't know their neighbors that well, and that old adage of be a neighbor, you know, help thy neighbor.
Yeah.
Just doesn't happen these days.
Maybe we should start some kind of a trunk line where if a person is in, you know, in need and can't get out, that she calls somebody who has access to numbers and that person and just see that they're taken care of.
Yeah.
Really, we really need that around here.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for calling.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Now, there's a lady that calls and reads a lot and has a lot of literature and gets tapes from all over and books from all over, and there aren't too many of them, but they are out there. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, May. I wanted to hear a comment about the movie last night.
Oh.
Or
yes.
On Saturday, rather.
Yes.
I would want to make a statement.
Yes.
And that is that you have to keep, whenever you see a movie like that or anything similar to it, you have to keep the perspective that there's a big difference between biblical Christianity and the Christian religion, per se.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of what happened in that movie, in fact, just about everything that happened in that movie was representative, I believe, of the Christian religion, per se, or Christendom, and not Christianity.
Yeah.
And so when people look at that and they seem to think that anybody that mentions the name of Jesus Christ or the Bible or anything else is all in the same pot, and they're not necessarily, that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, what was the title? I forget the exact title of the movie.
Thy Kingdom Come, Thy Will Be Done, or something like that.
Yeah, but what I think the movie was trying to say was that these were the fundamentalists, not the regular Christians, that these were the fundamentalist far-right political that used their fundamentalism and the politics to put people like Reagan in and get the programs that suit their fundamentalism. I don't think they meant all Christians.
No, but I think a lot of what the impression that I got of the movie was that there was, while there was a lot of people that were claiming to be fundamentalists and so forth, and possibly were in the movie, I think the problem there was that it was trying to show a lot of the hypocrisy, perhaps, of what they were saying and what was really what's really going on in the world in general.
Yeah.
And not everybody that is, in fact, a real Christian would agree with any of those people that were interviewed and so forth on that movie.
But I don't think the producer, say, if he had that in mind, what you're saying, he would bring the camera. If he'd go to Pacific Grove on a Sunday at a church, mm-hmm. he wouldn't have the same story.
No.
No. I think he went to Dallas because that's where the kooky religious right lives.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a lot. You can take, it's just like watching a program like 60 Minutes or something or any other program. Anything can be said or seem to be said by editing or by, you know, leaving something out in some way
yes.
or adding something or giving an impression of something because you don't hear the whole story in context.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of those people that were interviewed in that movie, perhaps they had a lot more to say on the subject, but maybe that was edited out somehow, and so an impression was given of what they did say, and you didn't get to hear the whole story.
Yeah, but take the example of Baker's with that poor fellow in the wheelchair, Kevin's house.
Yeah, well, that's a
I mean, what they were trying to show was the hypocrisy
of
the television evangelists, that you only see them on Sunday, and you give them money for Kevin, and they ask him, is it more important for you or your life that they do this, or fundraising, or the 4th of July, and he thinks he doesn't count at all, and he's used for commercials for the church.
Oh, I know. Well, that was pretty eye-opening, to say the least. But
wasn't that sad?
Yeah.
Nobody lives in that house but him.
I know, and you'd think that a house that size, they should house 20 kids like that, maybe, or something.
Yes. There wasn't even anyone around him caring.
I know.
I mean, I think what they're trying to show is when you send your money and they take their big eyes and weep, that behind that posturing is fraud.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. And a lot of those people that, like the Bakers, perhaps, and others like them, you know, I can't speak for all of them because I don't know their whole story, but the thing is, that's not representative, is the point I'm trying to make, of everybody that names the name of Christ.
No, but I think what they were trying to show was that the other churches aren't like that, that these are the real sleazebags.
Okay, I can go with that.
That's what I think they were trying to show, because they showed them crying for this money, and, you know.
Oh, yeah, well, it's a lot of emotional tugging, and then they drive their Rolls Royce home.
Yeah, and then they showed Carswell, and they show the bowling alley and the gym for Christ, you know.
Yeah.
And then they go to the black home and the Chicano, and they're so poor. And then they make them hear 2 hours of lecture to get a sandwich on white bread. You have to admit, that was a pretty good film.
Yeah, it did open some eyes for sure. Thank you, May.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. You know, before that film came out, at 1 o'clock, there was a film called A Stitch in Time. And it was put together by women in Boise, Idaho. The producer was out here. And it was about a quilt that was made for members of Congress to sleep under that to get a feeling of peace and these people that wanted peace. And Orrin Hatch was there, and Senator John Kerry, and members of Congress. And then they made a quilt to put in Geneva, to put where the conference table is, the Soviets and the United States, talking with portraits of children, 20 children from each country, representing the faces representing the country. And I went over to the Sunset Theater, and I thought all the women's groups were Women International League for Peace and Freedom, and I thought the Civil Liberties Union, and I thought all the social activists. There were 300 here when Danny Sheehan was here. I thought a lot of the social activists would go to see A Stitch in Time, because these women have made 14 quilts and given them to various peace activists, and they have so much love and caring and live in Idaho. Well, there were 5 ushers at the Sunset Auditorium, and me, I was the only person there. And then just before the film started, 2 men were there, and a woman came up who didn't have any money, so they let her in. And the press reporter from one of the papers was there, and the producers were up on the stage. And there was 4 people in the auditorium. It was so pathetic. 3 people, and 3 got in and worked with the group, you know, got in on passes, and I was over 55 and didn't pay. So the 2 paid people, and this represented years and years of stitching, and a movie about these people going to London and meeting the Russian women, and trip to the Soviet Union and to Geneva, and how much effort they put into expressing what they want. And then the reception here. Last year I mentioned the movie Half-Life with the hydrogen bomb testing in the Marshall Islands, and there were 4 people, a friend and myself and 2 others, and this time there were 3. I sure picked the good movies, but I don't see people that should be there, and it is very discouraging, considering the way the news is going, that people are not getting out and doing more. And if you're 55 and older, it was free, so a lot of the people around it could have gotten in free. But that's the way it is. It's pretty sad, and the lack of identity with the people making it and the efforts they're making and not rewarding them with just 1 hour of your time, it merely made me sad. Well, listen, there's a call, but I can't take it because the time is up. You're going to have to save that call for next week, okay? My name is Mae Bressel, and I have to stop this part of World Watchers. Jim Bourne is out there and ready for some music for you. So I want to just say that the previous hour, World Watchers, has been made possible in part by ARC, Laser Optical Technology, a leading manufacturer of microcomputer peripherals, located in Scotts Valley and available by calling 438-7400. The views expressed are those of myself and do not necessarily reflect the views of the zoo staff or board of directors. I'll be back with you next week, so hang in there and read some more, and we'll share the information on World Watchers at 7 o'clock next week.